Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. In this week's episode, Dubhead tries to remember. Host of the Rhythm Selection for 19 years and Program Director at BFM from 2000 till 2003. Memories. I've got to start by saying that I think radio is a magic thing. It's an invisible beam that flies through the air, and radio did actually change my life. 1979, I was at boarding school. I would have been 14, and I heard punk rock for the first time. Suddenly, everything changed. The worldview shifted, and I no longer felt like an alone freak. I mean, sure, I was still an alone freak, being the only punk rocker at my school, but I was hearing music that spoke to me, and everything changed, determined my future, if you like. I tuned into Barry Jenkins on 1251 ZM. He used to do a nighttime show after 10 o'clock, well after lights out. Small plastic transistor radio turned down very, very low, pressed against my ear under the blankets. And he played just the most incredible music. Bands I heard on his show for the first time, The Jam, The Specials, The Clash, The Ruts, The Damned, so much incredible music, all of which I was just identifying with. And then later as the show progressed, bands that became my favourites, like Wire and Young Marble Giants, it just opened up an entire new world and set my course, as it were. So hats off to Barry Jenkins, because really that was suddenly, you know, I felt there was a place in the world where I might belong. Up until then, it was just a mind-numbing routine of uniform and bells going and doing what you were told to do, and suddenly everything had changed. By 1981, I finished seventh form, left boarding school, and got a job in a record shop. Shortly after that, I joined a band. It was a gothic punk band, as it happens. I was the lead singer of a gothic punk band called Silent Decree, and we were off. Of course, by 81, I was getting well into reggae, and used to listen to the campus radio sound system on BFM. It used to play every Sunday afternoon. The host was Duncan Campbell, and he played amazing reggae music, and the type of music that you really couldn't hear anywhere else at all. So this was appointment listening. So around about 1983, I started DJing myself, and I was still playing with bands, but I got out there, and through Mark Phillips and Peter Ehrlich, that used to run a certain bar and stuff like that, started venturing into DJing. The first time I started coming up to PFM would have been around 1985, I believe, and I had friends that did shows up here. Jonathan Roper and Larry DeZuta were both people doing shows, and they would invite me up and ask me to play a selection of reggae music, maybe 20 minutes, maybe half an hour of some sounds. I had become Dubhead in 1983 as well. And one of the first associations with the station, apart from guesting on those guys' shows and generally hanging out, was really just helping, you know, volunteering, coming up. This was before internet and emails, so BFM used to send a lot of letters. You could sit there for hours licking envelopes and putting stamps on letters and just generally hanging out, cleaning up. So that was my introduction, and I was encouraged by Jonathan Roper, who really wanted me to do a show on BFM, but at that time I think I had a lot of other things going with the bands and the DJing, and also the campus radio sound system really fulfilled my need for everything I wanted to hear in reggae. BFM did not need another reggae show. Duncan Campbell's show was every Sunday, and it was enough. I probably at the time didn't feel like I could bring much extra or more than what he was playing. But in any case, in 1986, BFM decided to put out a compilation record in conjunction with Doug Hood and Chris Knox, who were doing a lot of work with Flying Nun. BFM compiled an album. Now, that album was called Outnumbered by Sheep, and the group that I was in 1984 and 1985 was called The Kiwi Animal. BFM approached us and said, would you like to contribute a track? And of course, you know, we were like, yes. There are a lot of really, really good bands on this album. The Kiwi Animal was something of a bit of a different group. myself and Brent Haywood and Julie Cooper, we were not really part of the, I guess, the alternative scene in Auckland at the time, in terms of we didn't used to play in rock venues. In fact, we didn't play amplified at all. We used to do acoustic performances, and we used to play mainly in art galleries, churches, theatres, and warehouses and spaces like that. I think we were very honoured that BFM had asked us to contribute a track. Now, by 1986, we had already released two albums, and the Kiwi Animal had become sort of known for very quiet, very melodic, sort of tuneful, anarchic music, and they could have chosen anything from either of the two albums. The track we sent them was experimental, to say the least. There was a piece of music that we had recorded as some incidental soundtrack music for a short film. It's a composition where the sounds are pouring water, ripping paper, wine glasses played with your fingers, wet fingers, and towards the end you'll hear some additional war sounds recorded on dictaphone. And you know, the amazing thing is that BFM liked it, and they included it. The album is called Outnumbered by Sheep. The front cover was drawn by David Mitchell, then of Goblin Mix. The back cover was, all the artwork was designed by Chris Knox, and he wrote the liner notes. It's a real time capsule. It's BFM's first compilation of New Zealand music. It's a record. The number is BFM001. Flying Nun did all the manufacturing and distribution. And there were some brilliant bands on here. Headless Chickens are there, Chris Knox, The Expendables, Birdnest, Roy's, Abel Tasman's, Goblin Mix, Fetus Productions, and more. Really a great historical document, this album. And I think it's it says a great deal about BFM and their spirit and what they were doing, that they accepted this track and not only accepted it, but liked it and put it on the record. So this is The Kiwi Animal. The track is called Dragons in Eden, and as I said, it's not a pleasant thing to listen to at all. The fact that they took this song and accepted it and put it on a record alongside these other great bands tells you a lot. Dragons in Eden, The Kiwi Animal. Thank you. So we continued through the mid-80s into the late 80s, playing in various different bands and DJing all around the place. Pubs, clubs, bars, parties, that sort of thing. By 1990, I think Duncan Campbell was coming near to the end of his tenure after hosting Campus Radio Sound System from 1980. The station manager at the time, Liz Tan, approached me and said, would you like to do a reggae show? Would you like to do a radio show? By then, of course, I'd spent all that time from 1985 till 1990 sort of popping into BFM periodically and, like I said, helping out as a volunteer, appearing on other people's radio shows. And by 1990, I felt I had enough records and I was ready to step up. So the rhythm selection was born. Right from the outset, I knew what sort of radio show I wanted to do. I'd been completely shown the way by Duncan Campbell. Play a nice variety of different music. Talk about it, but not too much, but, you know, interesting and informative and straight ahead. So that was really the model. And one of the first things I had to decide was I wanted a theme tune. The Campus Radio Sound System had a theme tune. Most shows did, but I had to have a theme tune. So now, one of the first early dub records that I'd got into, way back in about 1981 or something, had been LKJ in dub. Lyndon Kwesi Johnson, a dub poet from the UK. This was a dub companion album, if you like. Mostly tracks from an album he released called Bass Culture. Now, the guy who had produced this dub album and also created most of the music that was on it was a guy called Dennis Bovell. He was the leader of the dub band and the producer and the guy behind the music that was the backing for Lyndon Kwesi Johnson's poetry. His contributions had really stood out on this album. LKJ in dub was released on the Island label. I really liked his stuff. Now, he also released stuff, dub albums and stuff, as Blackbeard. One such album was called Iwa Dub. This was released in 1980. Brilliant classic bit of UK dub. Dennis Bovell, fantastic guy. We were lucky enough to meet him here at BFM when Lyndon Kwesi Johnson toured a few years back now. Troy did an interview with him on the Rock and Roll Wire, and Dennis Bovell, who was travelling with LKJ, ended up doing most of the talking. Fantastic guy and an awesome producer. Now, I chose this track from Iwa Dub as my theme song. It's called Jazz with 3 Z's. Timeless piece of dub music. I think because he's, you know, a UK producer rather than from Jamaica, it has a certain sort of a flavour to it. It definitely is jazzy. And one of the things I like best of this track was the introduction, which starts with the sound of a bong water bubbling, or a hookah pipe if you like, and then goes into the sound of someone dragging the needle off the record, a huge scratching sound. Now, this is not scratching like hip-hop scratching or anything like that. This is not even as pleasant as a rewind. This is an almighty scratch, and I love the way the tune starts with that. So the bass on this track is played by Dennis Bovell. It's produced by him under the name of Blackbeard. This is Jazz. This is the theme music for the rhythm selection, Monday nights, 9 till 11, still is.
We'll be right back.
Even after 19 years of playing that track every single time as the intro music to the Rhythm Selection, it still sounds good. So throughout the 90s, I continued hosting the Rhythm Selection. One of the features I enjoyed most about the show was getting guest selectors up. I had a lot of friends who were also DJs and involved in music, and in order to keep things interesting for myself, I would invite people to come along and play half a show's worth of music. Many MCs and singers also came up, particularly people from the 12 Tribes of Israel, Rastafarian DJs and musicians, people like Oblix Brown, Captain Silver, Sergeant Benji, Tuffy Culture, Jules Isa, Jesse James, Mighty Asterix, MC Mega Power, a lot of these people, and a lot of my friends who were DJs as well had guest spots on the Rhythm Selection. It was always fun, and it was always a mix-up, and still is. You know, I continue to welcome guest selectors onto the show, even now. In 1997, I had the opportunity to get a job at BFM, and that in itself is an interesting story. There wasn't a job advertised. They weren't looking for somebody, but I was unemployed at the time, registered as unemployed, and I had a young and progressive case manager at the New Zealand Employment Service. His name was Matt Nichols. He's currently now the sales manager at BFM. Back then, he was a young fella at the New Zealand Employment Service. Now, they had started a pilot scheme. It was an idea to try and get long-term unemployed people into some sort of relevant work field. I sort of qualified for this, and with his help, we put together a proposal. Now, the scheme basically meant that New Zealand Employment Service would subsidise a large part of a very small wage for a company to take someone on board and for them to gain work experience and learn some things, some training, and in exchange, the employment service would pay for most of this person's wage. The station manager at the time in 1997 at BFM was a guy called Adam. He'd come to us from Contact FM in Hamilton. He was a very laid-back, progressive type of a guy, Adam, and he was like, oh, what, so we only have to pay this guy like a pittance? Like, really, it was. New Zealand Employment Service covered sort of, you know, almost 90% of it or something like that. It was a crazy scheme. Needless to say, it never went on to be a huge hit, but it was a pilot scheme, and Matt Nichols went to a lot of work to get me on it, and we convinced Adam that it would be a good idea for me to help out around BFM, and so that's how I came to start on the staff at BFM. In 1997, I was working as an assistant to the program director then, who was Bill Curtin, and I used to schedule all the ads on BFM and help Bill out with the music and programming type of duties, putting stuff into the CD library and records and whatnot. It was great. It was a fantastic place to work. I already had a long association with BFM and knew all the people here and continued to do my show, but had to turn up every day at 9 o'clock, and it was brilliant. It was very good for me, very good for BFM as well, that my wages were being covered by the New Zealand Employment Service. So this lasted for 6 months. He then put me on another extension for a further 6 months, and essentially, I had a year in which to ingrain myself into the office culture, make myself undisposable, and got a permanent job. That was good. End of 1998, Bill Curtin left. The position was advertised. I applied, didn't get it. Warren Thomas got the job, but that was okay. As Suzanne Wilson, who was station manager, commented that anyone who was the program director after Bill Curtin wasn't going to look very good by comparison, and certainly anyone who became the program director after Warren Thomas was going to look brilliant. So that was me. A year later, Warren was ready to leave. He had a terrible time here, and he left, and then I was appointed program director there. So pretty much from the end of 1999, I think the official appointment was from the beginning of 2000, I became program director at BFM. And I knew what to do by then. It was a job I wanted. Now, one thing that I've done a lot at BFM over the years is voicing ads. Now, that's usually a job that falls upon whoever's around at the time. And I guess because I'd become part of the permanent staff here, I was around a lot. I was always happy to voice ads. I always liked it. It was fun to do. Nobody gets paid for lending their talent to voiceovers up here at BFM, but it's the best way to get in queue for free concert tickets. Let me put it that way. BFM will look after people. And so for years and years, I voice ads. I still voice ads on BFM. You'll hear me on all those ads, and it's a lot of fun to do it. I want to play an ad now, particularly because with people we've spoken to for Historical Society, often On You Sound and Adrian Sherwood comes up as being a very, very important producer and record label for BFM in the 80s and even in the 90s. Certainly for myself, I played a lot of Adrian Sherwood-produced music, a great deal of On You Sound artists. And I think my favourite of all the bands on the On You Sound stable, which ranged from Tackhead and African Head Charge right through to New Age Steppers and all sorts of stuff, Mark Stewart and Mafia, Gary Clale, etc. My favourite of all those bands is Dub Syndicate. It was sort of a project band, but most of what they did were rhythms recorded by Style Scott and Flabber Holt from the Roots Radix, recorded in Jamaica with free time, because as session musicians they often didn't get paid by the producer, but he'd give them free time. So they'd just record rhythms, send them to Sherwood, and he'd get extra musicians on top and dub them up. So the Dub Syndicate, incredible band, have released 15 albums, I believe, and by far stand out for me. Now, why this is relevant is, after talking about recording voiceovers for ads, this was an unusual one. I want to play a Dub Syndicate track as a tribute to On You Sound and Adrian Sherwood, as one of the greatest dub producers ever, still is. But this is actually an ad for BFM. Now, of course, it's completely illegal to take a band's piece of music and use it as a bed for an ad, but hey, you know, this is BFM. Now, at this time, our regular production engineer, Elmer Reitzma, I believe was away on holiday, and Bob Kerrigan, creative director at BFM at the time, was filling in as production manager. We had a new client called Soundcheck. Soundcheck, they were car audio specialists, and Bob said, look, I want to do a reggae ad, and I don't want you to voice this ad, I want you to sing it. So, over the course of an afternoon or something, we got some lyrics together, got a bed of music that I liked, which was the Dub Syndicate, and we went into production and recorded this ad for Soundcheck. It's very humorous. Like I said, I still voice over ads frequently, though I've only ever once voiced over an ad singing it, singing the vocals, writing the vocals and the harmonies for the jingle. So here's an ad for Soundcheck. I can't remember what year it was recorded, but the voiceover is none other than the glamorous Jennifer Weather Center. The music is by the Dub Syndicate, and the singing is Dubhead.
Life's a party. I've got my invitation.
Sound check. Number one sound specialist.
It'll be real. The big, big sound check. The car audio and security store in Green Lane is having a relocation sale.
Because if your hi-fi is sounding weaker, and it sounds like clock radio speaker, You need some bass and a new tweeter. Check out Soundcheck, cause music is cheaper. Yes, Soundcheck, get off the back. The Soundcheck, it is where it is at. If your car stereo is whack, then you must get down and check out Soundcheck. Soundcheck.
This means all stock must go for 2 weeks solid. They're selling Alpine radio cassettes and Alpine CD players. In fact, everything Alpine at never to be repeated prices. Subs, amps, speakers, everything must be sold. So there's never been a better time to buy your car stereo or car alarm. All at the Soundcheck, Green Lane. The relocation sale to end all relocation sales. It's got to go. And so do you. Ring 5244 Triple A.
In 2000, I became the program director here at BFM, and it was not a responsibility that I took lightly. I had worked here under such fantastic people, previous program directors as Bill Curtin and Graham Hill and Paul Cassidy and people like that. So I knew that there were standards that needed to be maintained. I think coming from the ranks of the BFM DJs, I'd already been a DJ at BFM for 10 years by the time I became a program director. I definitely had the volunteer DJs' best interests at heart, and the listeners were always a priority. I guess, again, as a show host, I felt that there were great expectations for what BFM had to deliver. So for the first year, it was a mad panic, basically, figuring out how I was going to do things, trying to do everything myself, cramming in huge days, listening to every CD that came across my desk, generally freaking out and thinking, what the hell am I doing? Also in 2000, I had become involved in a compilation of New Zealand underground dub music. This had come about because I knew some of the chaps at Cog Transmissions, which was a studio and a fledgling electronic record label which had started up in Kingsland. Now, through the radio show, I was getting a lot of demos sent to me from bedroom producers, guys with samplers and computers who were making some great dub tracks, but they were not getting out there. And these people would sometimes send me their tracks to play on the radio show. Also, Cog, being a new record label and being primarily focused on electronic music, programmed music, would get sent demos as well. And simultaneously, we had the same idea. And the genesis of that was an album called Dub Combinations. It was released on the Cog label in the year 2000, which was my first year here as program director. I worked on that with Chris Chetland from Cog and Andrew Manning, also from Cog, who is now currently the host of Freak the Sheep, the New Zealand music show here on BFM. And essentially, it was Andrew and myself kind of went, you know, put the call out for tracks and went through the tracks and decided which ones got on there and which ones didn't and how we were going to put them out there. Cog didn't have a lot of money and I didn't have a lot of time, but part of the deal was that I had to produce a track myself. And I was like, well, they had the recording studio and the free time and the wherewithal to help me with it, because of course I didn't own a sampler or a computer or any of the necessary equipment myself to produce a track, but I did have a very good idea of what I wanted to do. I wanted it to be something that was kind of brooding and menacing in the way that a lot of dub can be quite brooding, and yet also was funky. So it had to have breakbeats on it because I wanted it to have wah-wah guitar and breakbeats and give it some sort of funky thing. Now, I had produced some tracks previously, released on Deep Grooves compilations and even had a 12-inch single released through Deep Grooves as the Sound Foundation with Angus McNaughton previously in the 80s. So this wasn't like brand new to me, but for the beginning, it's called Dub Racer. The artist is Sound Foundation. That was the name that I was using for recording projects, the Sound Foundation. At the beginning of the track, I wanted a race car. I didn't have that sound effect, but Elmer Reitzma, who is production engineer here at BFM, provided it. He also provided me with the sample of a rim shot. I made a reggae drum beat that you'll hear underneath the breakbeats, and he provided me with the sound of the rim shot. So there was help from Elmer Reitzma, and also, of course, Andrew Manning, who did all the sequencing, and Daniel Hardawira, who is currently the bass player of House of Shem. He's also played with Shefu's band Token Village and the 12th Drive Tribes of Israel band before that. Very good bass player and lead guitar from Ned Nartai. Fantastic guitarist, plays with all sorts of people, Dimmer and whatnot, and is also a great DJ under the name of Killerman Raro. This is from Dub Combinations, the first chapter on Cog Transmissions, the year 2000. This is the Sound Foundation with Dub Racer. So that was released in 2000 as part of Dub Combinations, a continuing series that I co-produced with Cog Transmissions. We did Chapter 2 in 2001 and Chapter 3 was released in 2002. And I was very happy that Chapter 3 won a BNET Music Award. Dub Combinations Chapter 3 won Best Compilation at the BNET Music Awards in 2003. I was very glad because there was no nepotism involved. It had to, in order to be nominated, it had to be agreed upon by all the program directors from all of the BNET stations. And to win, it had to get the popular vote. It was the people decide, the people vote. It was up against some stiff competition that year too. Loop Recordings had a good compilation out, and I think the first Power Tools compilation was out that year as well. So I was very happy about that. Now, the year 2000, I was floundering around figuring out what to do. I think by 2001, I was starting to get a handle on things. I'd learned a little bit about prioritizing and most of all about delegation. Because I think for the first year, I tried to do absolutely everything myself and didn't want to make any other people do stuff for me. I didn't want to burden them. But by 2001, I'd figured it out. I reiterate what I think both Graham Hill and Bill Curtin, my predecessors, have said, and that's at the time when you are the guy who's determining the playlist and looking after what shows are on and overseeing the DJs and all your news and editorial and stuff, you feel that you are caretaker of something very, very fragile and that at any moment it can go all horribly wrong or it can end. It's not quite that serious, but certainly at times BFM is in a fragile state, but the mantle of responsibility does weigh heavily as a program director. You're in charge of what songs get on and what songs don't, and you have to use the opinions of your DJs and your listeners and a lot of your intuition to know what should be getting played and what shouldn't be getting played on BFM. One of the most enjoyable things that I did while I was program director that I was involved in was the BFM Live to Airs. During New Zealand Music Week, which we would have two of every year, we would invite a whole lot of local bands, bands who'd submitted demos and made music that was being played on BFM, to come in and play live on the radio, 20-minute sets, 25 bands over a week, sometimes even 35 bands. We would have 7 bands a day, so every show would have a band on it, or Breakfast and Drive would have a couple of bands performing a live 20-minute set. The great thing about the Live to Airs, of course, is that they were entirely live, just streamed down a wire into our transmitter and sent out exactly as they happened, and some very spontaneous moments occurred during these. I'm about to play you one of my favourites, Shafu and the Crates. When a band's playing live, things go wrong. A certain amount of improvisation and quick adaptation is required. This is a blooper moment by Shafu and the Crates, and they're performing the song Top Floor, 2001 Live to Airs, live on BFM. And a great thing happened. Shay, who was at the front of the band, they were sort of organized in a circle in the room. Shay in the front was, of course, singing. Just moments before they were due to start the song, the drummer's kick pedal fell to pieces completely. Now, his entire pedal mechanism, ba-dumph, fell to pieces, completely fell to like 4 or 5 pieces, and he didn't have another pedal there. However, the rest of the band had noticed because he'd signaled to them, "No, don't start, something's wrong." He didn't say anything, obviously, he was live to air, but he'd signaled to them, "No." Shay, who was getting ready to start singing, didn't catch the signal. He didn't know that the drummer couldn't come in when the drummer couldn't come in, which was the start of the song, right? So Shay starts singing the first verse a cappella. He's got Brian Zebby on guitar. Brian's just strumming a few quiet chords, and Shay sings. He keeps going. Because, you know, there's a listening audience. There's no time to stop and find another kick pedal. He sings a cappella. Meanwhile, the drummer jumps off his kit, goes over to the other drum kit, which was there as part of the backline equipment, grabs the pedal off that, runs back, bolts it onto his kick drum, and gets ready, signals the rest of the band when he is ready, and he's got this new pedal attached to his kick drum, counts in with the sticks, boom, and they all start. It's just one of those wonderful live moments. It's a rough-as, raw live recording. There's a bit of feedback in the mix there. The guitar is a little bit out of tune, but this beginning bit of Shay just singing a cappella without the rest of the band. And he would have been thinking, why aren't they coming in? Where's the music? But being the true professional he is, he just carried on. Now, such was the effect of this that in future live tours and concerts, they actually performed the song like this, a cappella, for the first verse, just because it had such a great dynamic effect. But at the time, it was a complete accident. Check this out. From 2001, live to air on BFM, Shay Fu and the Crates with Top Floor.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. So we keep on moving for that right vibe. As we keep on smiling, we are moving towards the light. 'Cause this is for when we used to say, fight for our rights. This is for when we would defend our people's lives. So hold that look again, so the home team might win. I got your back, 'cause give me a sign of trust. This is for when we used to say, fight the good fight. This is for when we would defend our people's light. Hold that look again, so the home team might win. I got your back, 'cause give me a sign of trust. If you could hold that look again, with a mind like smooth lightning, I'd feel safer, I'd be better nature. Top floor of the world, maybe I wouldn't act on cue like all those times before. Oh, should've said, oh, yeah, oh, oh, oh. I'm out on a limb, I'm standing now, I don't care who sees. Convincing myself before someone else confuses me, not to hold that look again, so the home team might win. I got your back, 'cause give me a sign of trust. If you could hold that look again, with a mind like smooth lightning, I feel safer, I'd be better nature. If there was someone that I knew on the top floor of the world, maybe I wouldn't act on cue like all those times before. If there was someone that I knew on the top floor of the world, maybe I wouldn't act on cue like all those times before. Oh, should've said, to big myself up, man, I need no inferiority complex. Could ever cloud my dreams when storm comes, Xavier. Merely call the meeting for a fleeting moment. Refract the light of my convex lens for focus. Stay tuned to this TVMC. Come a rockin' worldwide, come around the country. Too many front row seats for non-paying MCs. Eagerly awaiting, sedated masses of eyeballs and flesh in a trance. Ready to make you by the next broadcast. But what representing from our own satellite villages. Reruns all night, emitting the signal, a galaxy to explore. We boldly flow, we're all Rasta float before, never alone. Roll with crew, boys come flat. Big budget, large movie with full cast, no intermission. Strictly idleness from the start. Judah, the functioning mouth and heart. What, what, what? If there was someone that I knew on the top floor of the world, maybe I wouldn't act on you like all those times before.
By 2003, I'd become completely worn out. It was the dream job, of course. Being the guy that chose the music here for BFM, for all those listeners, was a fantastic job. Very demanding, however. Answerable to an awful lot of people, a huge team. At that time, we had 85 shows a week on the radio and something like 100 to 120 volunteer DJs and news and editorial personnel. So you're looking after a massive team. And people were always nice to me, particularly bands that had new demos they wanted played, or people from record companies were always very, very nice to me. But it was a great job to have. But a person could only do it for so long. A lot of stress, a lot of late night calls. So-and-so hasn't turned up for their show or whatever. You could only do it for so long. But I enjoyed every minute of it and still enjoy being part of BFM today. I really enjoy doing my radio show every week, and as long as they keep releasing new music, both local New Zealand reggae and also fresh reggae from Jamaica and elsewhere in the world, I will enjoy doing my radio show. I sometimes get a little bit scared and think that they're going to no longer think it's relevant, or someone will be like, Dubhead, you've been here for too long, it's time to move over. But I still get a great kick out of it, and I met a guy the other day through email, hooked up with this guy, and I said, you sound familiar, you sound like someone I should have met, and he said, well, we haven't met, but I feel like I know you, I've been listening to your radio show since I was 10 years old, and that caused me to do a double take. I was thinking, oh my God, 10 years old, you know what I mean? He's kind of 22 years old now, and is a producer of dancehall music himself, and it just made me have a think that, you know, the brain of a 10-year-old is still developing, and here he was listening to the rhythm selection every Monday night. Good Lord, there is a great deal of responsibility. I continue to be active in the music scene, working on events across the road at AUT. I DJ all around the place, play a lot of gigs, particularly with bands, and continue, of course, to do the radio show and pop up from almost every week to do voiceovers for BFM and this current documentary series, which has been a great pleasure to be involved in and to produce, because I've been getting to meet all these people from way back in the 80s and the 90s and catch up with some BFM faces from yesteryear who I haven't seen for a very long time. In itself, that has been a lot of fun, the BFM Historical Society. In summary, the station has been successful because of its unorthodoxy, because the fact that it is made up of a team of volunteer DJs, people who don't get paid, people who do it simply because they love music and they've got something they want to play to the listening public. Challenging music, difficult music, different music. BFM has always stood by this sort of thing. BFM was the first radio station to ever play hip-hop, for instance, or drum and bass, or you know, any new music form, you name it, BFM played it before anyone else played it. BFM plays the type of music that no other radio stations anywhere will play, and our DJs are the most eclectic bunch of weirdos that you will ever hear on a radio. And I love that, and I think this has been BFM's success. People often don't realize, but sailing tenuously close to disappearing or closing down or collapsing. There have been many, many different station managers and people in management at BFM who've changed over the years. The DJs are constantly recycling. Old people will leave and new people will step on board at all times. So it's a constantly recycling living organism. And I think there's something of an ethos. It's something that is handed down. There is a spirit of BFM, most definitely, and you will get that from speaking to anyone who listens to BFM or anyone who is ever contributed or done a show on BFM, that there is a certain ethos involved. And it's not spoken. People just know. The BFM DJs know, the BFM listeners know. And it's in the music that they play It's a special indefinable thing. I'm going to leave you now with one last track. I had to make a choice, and it's very, very difficult to choose after 19 years on the radio and so much incredible, legendary reggae music. The track I'm going to play now is on the Studio One label, which is surely a foundation label and studio for Jamaican music. It's often referred to as the University of Reggae because many reggae greats got the start of their career at Studio One. It's also called the Jamaican Motown because it simply had so many hits appeared on the Studio One label. So I'm going to play a Studio One track. This is an instrumental by saxophonist Cedric M. Brooks. It's called Mundungu. It's an old Studio One cut, but one that was thankfully reissued by the Soul Jazz label from a compilation called Studio One Scorcher 2002. And I love this track. This track could be a theme song for me. In fact, I've played it often enough out at gigs that it almost is a personal theme. I love it. It's strident rhythms. It has the most fantastic horn section. Minor key melodies. So again, it has that sort of dread, foreboding, brooding kind of a feel to it. It's Afrocentric because it has Nyabingi reggae drums on it. Essentially, it's jazz music because Cedric M. Brooks and his groups were very, very jazz inspired, and it's roots reggae of the first degree. And there's something about this track just makes me want to lift my head up high and stride out, pump your chest out, hold your head up, and march boldly. And that's my advice for BFM. March boldly. His Mundungu, Cedric M. Brooks. You have been listening to the BFM Historical Society, a radio documentary series made to commemorate BFM's 40th anniversary. The Historical Society is broadcast every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and is replayed later on in the week as a podcast from BFM's website. The Historical Society is produced at BFM by Dubhead.